It's time to talk all things Dirty Birds. It's Falcons Flyover. With John Chuckery on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Back in the Kia Studios on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. John Chuckery Show coming in live on this Tuesday evening. 404-726-0929. That is our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. We're about to watch Philadelphia and the D-backs get at it, and Game 7, of course, and winner take all, and we'll see. Like I said, my heart wants the D-backs to win, but my head says that Philadelphia is going to take care of business tonight, so we'll see what happens. We'll keep you up to date on all of this. It would really suck for Philadelphia to go to the World Series twice in a row last couple of years, so even though they didn't win it last year, it was still sucky to see them in all of that. This year, I look at all things Atlanta Falcons. It is the Falcons flyover. We'll talk to our buddy D. Orlando Ledbetter coming up here in about 20 minutes from right now. So your Pro Football Focus grades from over the weekend. The top five offensive grades against the Bucs. Lindstrom was a 92-1. Scotty Miller with that big catch, that big, deep catch, 86-6. Drew Dahlman was an 83.5. He runs blocks well. You know, Dahlman has got the highest run blocking grade among centers. He's 20th in pass protection, but he's got the highest run blocking grade. Jake Matthews was an 80.2, and Kadero Hodge was a 69.8. So interesting, of the top five offensive Pro Football Focus grades, three of them were their starting offensive linemen. That's because they played really well against a very good defensive front, very good defense all the way around in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That's really how they're living. But the Falcons really did a great job in running the football. And we'll hear from Arthur Smith here in just a minute. But, again, I thought that, you know, the offensive line played really well, and they kept Desmond upright. You know, he took the one sack, and he took that big hit for the fumble. But, you know, I thought they did a good job all the way around. Your top five defensive grades for the week, David Onyemata, who continues to play outstanding football, 89.6. Nate Landman was an 88.7. He continues to play really inspired football. That has been a very nice addition. You don't like to see Trey Anderson go down, but if there is a bright spot, it's been the play of Nate Landman coming in and you know, doing the job. Jesse Bates was third at 76.8. Lakeo London, 76.7. Did you see today? They signed him to the 53-man roster. So he's been a practice squad guy, but he has really stepped up over the last couple few weeks here, and he's played well. So now he's part of the 53. And Lorenzo Carter with a 72.5. I think he got the only sack in the game. Or, sorry, one of the three sacks in the game against Baker Mayfield. Other notables, Desmond was a 63.2. Drake London was a 69.1. Kyle Pitts, who I thought did a lot of good things in that game, 62.6. Tyler Algier, a 62.2. Caleb McGarry was a 44.8. Thought he had some issues. I'm going to talk to D-Led about this with A.J. Terrell, 48.4. I'll ask you, Orn, has he been a little handsy this year?
Yeah, there's been a lot more. Mike Evans is always a tough matchup, but it just, there seems like there's been more sort of holding calls or pass interference calls that have gone against him so far this season.
Do you know he's tied for eighth in the NFL in most penalties given up? And that includes offensive and defensive players. Of every player in the league.
Oh, wow.
He's tied for eighth in the NFL in most penalties allowed this season. So, again, that's not a number. That's not a stat you want to be up toward the top in.
But for a guy like him, though, I mean, who – he wants to be more of a physical, like a bump right. and run type of corner. Do you just sort of shrug that off as like, well, you know, maybe it's like, you don't tell him to stop playing that way, though, do you?
It hasn't killed them yet, right? I mean, that's the thing. He hasn't given up one of those where it's like really egregious and it really hurts your football team. So I at least feel good about that, but we'll talk to D-Led about that as well. Grady was a 65.7, and Jeff Okuda was a 50 in the game. So some good, some bad, and otherwise grades that were given out. Now the NFL is asking about what Bijan Robinson was going through on Sunday. You know, I said this to Mike and Carl. Should they have put him in the protocol or something? I mean, the quotes that he was giving, you know, well, I didn't know where I was when I woke up, and I was having headaches and this, that, and the other, and I didn't feel right, and I was woozy and this kind of stuff. I mean, should that have been a case where if you put him in the protocol, and again, get him in the protocol, if he misses, you know, this game and he, you know, misses a few days of practice, no big deal. The NFL probably doesn't start asking those kinds of questions. But here's why the NFL is asking. Because of the fantasy football crew and the gamblers. You know, that's the reason why. And the NFL is tied into gambling. Say what you will, but the NFL is tied into gambling, brother. They are tied into DraftKings or whatever the betting things are or whatever. They're tied into all of that. They may not allow it. They may not want their players involved, but they are neck deep in it. And they have a lot of people that fantasy football, betting, none of that worked out. And you know, again, I don't like the injury report. I think the injury report is bogus. But they only post injuries because of betting. And that's it. That's the only reasons why that they do that. So, again, now the NFL is asking about it. All right, let's hear from Coach Arthur Smith in his presser yesterday. Let's do number 10 here first. Arthur talking about how Algier and CP ran the football really well.
Yeah, I think the way that went, I mean, you know, our intent every week's a little bit different. Obviously, we want to be balanced, but the flow of the game, kind of what they've been doing, you know, some things we wanted to try to attack, but they certainly... CP and Tyler ran really, really hard. Those are two guys that are tough to tackle. It was hot down there in that kind of environment. And both those guys, they played really well.
Well, without Bijan Robinson, they still accumulated 156 yards on the ground. They got almost 40 yards out of Desmond Ridder. But I thought Patterson especially, he ran like the old Patterson. You saw, you know, he got featured. He got himself 10 carries in the game. Averaged 5.6 yards per carry, and I thought he had some big-time runs. That 19-yard run, you know, toward the end, those were big-time runs that he had. And Algier, the numbers don't look great, but I thought he picked up 10, you know, tough yards at times. And more importantly is they accumulated yards and rushing attempts. That was the thing, yards and rushing attempts. All right, we just talked about A.J. Terrell. Here's what Arthur Smith had to say about getting some penalties against the secondary.
We got called for a couple, obviously, defensively. Again, they, you know, they extended some drives, and we were able to still rally and stop them from scoring a bunch of points. But like I said, there's always things to work on, and, you know, we're aggressive in the secondary. And so they got us for a few and things that we, Jerry and those guys, they talked about on the sideline, but it didn't make our guys hesitant. And that's important.
Well, to Oren's point, you don't want Okuda and A.J. Terrell playing tentative, right? I mean, Terrell is a very aggressive quarterback. Look, he's not afraid to stick his nose in into running plays and all that. He's a guy that will stick his helmet in there and go try to make a play. So I don't want him to play any other way. That's why he's been so successful in the NFL. All right, here's Arthur and obviously the fumbles by Dez, but here's about talking about fixing crucial errors.
Yeah, I mean, obviously. I mean, there's nothing to work on. I mean, that would be, there's evidence from the week before to what happened yesterday, the passing game. And then, you know, he runs it in, does a good job. And, you know, the one they got out to the sideline, I mean, like I said, whether it was a slight, you know, thinking you're across and Winfield didn't give up on it, I mean, that was different. And the way he carried it was different. So there's always things to work on, always. Yeah, I mean, that's. If it was the same thing happening over and over and again, the same reasons why, well, you got a major issue. Don't excuse the fact that they happen, and you'll continue to work. So, like I said, it's when you're the quarterback, it's like being a corner. When you make mistakes, they're going to be magnified because, like, you're a corner. You're a man coverage, you get beat. You know, everybody's going to see the touchdown.
Yeah, and look, it wasn't staring down, you know, receivers and forcing balls and stuff like that. I mean, that part of it got cleaned up. Now you got to have some ball security. And again, I'm not blaming him necessarily on the first two. Third one, you got to make sure you protect the football and cross when you get in. All right, here's Arthur on not having Bijan and adjusting.
Along with my experience, you know, we always check in and tell those guys that are that part of the possible actives to always be ready. A lot of things have happened over the years in my experience in the NFL. I always check in. We get to the stadium. Guys, make sure nothing else has popped up. There's things that have popped up before, and so I always do a final check. And then obviously you talk to the player. And then the situation felt good that he'd be available. How much? We did see how the game went. And the way the game went, you know, CP and Tyler did a nice job. And but at the end of it, you know, I asked if he could go because I think he does a good job, especially in the 2-minute stuff. And he went out there, and how it affected the game, maybe it affected some calls. We'll never know, but got the look he wanted with Kyle's play, and you know, he got us a couple yards and finished the game and helped get the field goal closure.
Yeah, the first touch that he had in the game was with 30 seconds left. But again, I understand, and I understand why the league, you know, looks at this kind of stuff, you know, as well. But I just wonder about whether or not maybe he should have gone into protocol. All right, let's drop down to cut 18. Here's Arthur talking about winning by any means necessary.
Every opportunity, we continue to work. You know, when you're taking team on the road, you got to find a way to win. You know, and we were able to do that yesterday. As however it played out, which you got to give our guys credit for, is it's a resilient group, and they don't flinch in pressure moments. Whether that was on defense or going down to cover a punt, or certainly on offense. You know, it's a couple games now we've won, even with this young group, handling situational football pretty well. We know we haven't been perfect, but to our last 3 weeks, we've been able to execute in 2 minutes, get down there and have Koo take us home in the last second.
Absolutely. They're a resilient bunch. And again, people ask me all the time, well, what do you like about Ridder? I like Desmond Ridder. Ready? Are you sitting down? Are you understanding when I say these words? I like Desmond Ridder because he's a winner. He was a winner in college. He's a winner in the NFL. Now, again, we'll see how far that takes him. But he wills his team to win. Not every week, not perfect, but right now they're 4-3. And they sit atop the NFC South. And they find ways to win. That's why I like Desmond Ridder. I said he's not gonna wow you statistically. He's not gonna do all these kinds of, you know, he had thrown for the most yards in the NFL the last 2 weeks, but he's a winner. And he's resilient, and he tries to shake off and overcome mistakes, and he finds a way to win. Whether it was Green Bay, whether it was Houston, whether it was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he finds a way to win. Did you like that 101? No, you didn't like that one. Okay. So, all right, we're watching Philadelphia up here. See what they've got going on. All right. The Orlando Ledbetter is going to join us up next. Chuck Reed hanging out with you in the Kia Studios. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, Odyssey.com app.
Aim.
1, 2, 1, 2.
Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, back at it. Chuck Reed Show, hanging out in the Kia Studios on this Tuesday night with you. 404-726-0929. That is our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. Well, we talked about it last week. Falcons found a way to win. Look, I didn't care if it was 4-1 that they won. You just had to find a way to go on the road in Tampa Bay and find a win. Now they got to do the same thing coming up against the Tennessee Titans. Of course, we'll have all the coverage right here on your home of the Falcons, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Let's talk to our buddy, D. Orlando Ledbetter. He covers the Atlanta Falcons for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. AJC.com is where you can check out all of his work and follow him on his personal Twitter page, at DOrlandoAJC. D. Led, my friend, always appreciate a few minutes on the show. Thanks for joining me tonight.
Hey, John, thanks for having me this evening. Always a pleasure to come on your show and talk about the Falcons.
So was there, you know, again, I'm just thinking out loud. When I was reading some of the quotes from Bijan Robinson about waking up and not knowing where he was and the headaches and things like that, Was there any thought about just dropping him in the protocol for a few days and just kind of evaluate him and see what's going on? Or, you know, was there any thought process to that about doing something, you know, about that, which maybe, again, would have gotten the NFL off their back if they'd done something like that?
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, he got sick Saturday and they didn't find out. You know, they got to say this to beat the injury report and rules that they didn't know about it until pregame. And so, you know, then that would mean that he didn't contact the doctor or he just tried to self-medicate and do it on his own or, you know, just a bunch of scenarios. I think, like, if I'm a star player and I'm sick and I got doctors at my call, I'm going to probably call the team doctor and try to get something, you know, prescribed or otherwise. He wasn't tested for COVID or a concussion. He was asked about that. But, you know, we do know he has those migraines. And I have friends that have those cluster migraines and stuff, too. And, you know, they go and pass. And sometimes they don't even know when they're going to go. And but it seemed like that's something they would know about their star running back. But, yeah, they got to play like they didn't know anything, because then if they did, they would have had to report it to the league. And so, you know, the league is looking into this now on what they know, what they knew and when they knew it. And so forth. But yeah, I'm thinking I'm a high priced athlete, you know, played at the University of Texas. And, you know, when I get these cluster headaches, I'm probably going to call the team doctor. But we don't know that that was the case yet, but certainly was a fishy scenario. And this just the injury reporting in general. I mean, it's the healthiest team I've ever seen. They need to give all their doctors a raise, you know. But that's just different philosophies on how to do your injury reporting. You know, Belichick puts 25 people on there because that's how many people, you know, if they walked in the training room, that they put them on there. And then we have this approach here where, you know, I'm sure people are seeing the trainers and doctors, but they don't really, you know, it's nobody. They're just the healthiest team in all of football.
Yeah, I guess they got a good medicine man. Do they have Benny Hinn again or whatever? Or Evander's doctor? I mean, do they go to him? But anyway, D-Led, one thing I want to bring up to you and get your thoughts on. So I was looking at some numbers, and A.J. Terrell is the eighth most penalized player in the NFL, and that includes offensive players as well. It's not just defensive players. When you look at offensive players and defensive players combined, he's tied for a group of the eighth most penalized players in the league. Has he been a little handsy this year for your liking? I mean, I know he's an aggressive corner, but it has seemed to bite him. But reality is that they haven't really been hurt by some of those penalties as of yet.
Yeah, they're coaching a more aggressive style out there on the corners. You know, they're beating up the receivers. You know, they're trying to deny the double moves. It didn't work on the 40-yard touchdown. But he said going into this, we knew he was going to get called for stuff the way they're playing it. So, you know, it's new coaches back there, and they're you know, Jerry Gray. It's kind of the Bill Belichick philosophy when they were playing the world's greatest show on turf. You know, you're just going to beat them up on every play, and if they call it, you get away with some. And if they don't, you know, they'll come back to bite you at some point. But that's the way they're playing, and they're coaching a little bit differently on that side of the ball.
D. Orlando Ledbetter, the beat writer for the Falcons for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, joining me here on the WadeFord.com hotline. And, you know, D. Led, you and I specifically have talked – I've talked about you with this with you. I've talked about this with Steve Weish. I thought that the best addition to this football team wasn't a player, that it was Jerry Gray, you know, coaching that secondary, who was there with Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor in 2010 when those guys were rookies and think they turned out okay. Is this really kind of the influence of a Jerry Gray with the way that this secondary is playing? Because, again, we're seeing a little different style than what we've seen over the last couple of years. How much of the influence is this from Jerry Gray specifically?
It's Jerry and Steven Jackson, his buddy. They played together. You know, they've coached together at a couple different spots. They know exactly how they want to play it back there. So, You know, Jair Alexander in Green Bay is another guy he developed, and so forth. Yeah, certainly, given his resume and, you know, his influence, you know, you could afford to have a first-time signal caller in Ryan Nelson because, you know, Coach Gray knows exactly what he wants to play. And I'm sure he shares that with the coordinator, and they call it accordingly. So he's a de facto defensive coordinator, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, you know, at all on that. And D-Led, you know, when you look at this defense, I think they're on pace for 38 sacks, you know, now. And again, you know, part of that is some of the quarterbacks that they're facing and this, then the other. But I've talked about this, you know. Teams that have accumulated 38 or more sacks since 2016, 70% of those teams have ended up in the playoffs. They're getting to the quarterback, and they're doing a good job, you know, of all of this. But do you still think that they feel like that they're one guy away coming off the edge where this could really be one of the elite defenses in the league?
Well, yeah, John, no doubt about it. They are in the top 10 in every category right now. You know, that the main ones, scoring points, you know, they're up there in total yards, rush, and passing yards. So it is a top 10 defense. The sacks are 13, you know, after the slow start. They got 8 in the last two games. But, yeah, they're probably not going to give up a first-round or second-round pick for anybody. You know, everybody talk about Hunter and the Vikings had a fire sale on trade deadline. What they're probably hoping for is they need somebody on the roster to come on. And the person that it is Arnold Evercady. He needs to come on or, you know, you go back to Lorenzo Carter. You know, you're trying to develop the young kid, and Carter was your insurance. Carter got a sack last week. Evercady had did some damage the week before. Well, you need him to go on a tear where two or three, four, you know, sack games in a row where they start, you know, caring about where he is, you know. You know, he's gotten a lot of pressure in the past and had a good rookie season before he injured his elbow. But I think the development of your roster is probably the better way to go than going out and doing the old Ray Edwards move and giving up a draft pick for an outsider that might not work out.
And, you know, D-Led, I mean, I know you and I have talked about this. I was preaching this all in the offseason that I thought Evercady had to make the biggest leap going forward. And again, he has done some flashes. I think a couple of weeks ago in the game against the Commanders, he had a sack and a half. What has been, I don't know, what has been the thing that has not allowed him to just kind of, you know, explode just yet? Or what's holding him back from being a premier type of pass rusher?
Yeah, I thought it was him, Troy Anderson, and Richie Grant all had to make leaps this year. And now Troy's knocked out, so that's not going to happen. I think it's just doing it. Just doing it. He's got the speed. He's got the physical short area quickness and power. I just think the reps, the more, you know, he can play out there, the more he can stay out there. Then you can rest Bud Dupree, you know, Lorenzo, you can give Calais a break. But, yeah, at some point you got to just play him and let him go. I think reps and play snaps is the answer to his problem.
D-Led, you and I have talked about this before, and I continue to look at it. The Falcons are still 25th in starting field position. There's only 7 teams in the league worse as far as average starting field position to start a drive than what the Falcons are. And look, you're asking your, you know, inexperienced quarterback to basically drive over 75 yards, almost 76 yards per drive to be able to score a touchdown. Again, what can they do to, I mean, again, I know that obviously Avery Williams was a big part of this, but I feel like that there are other things than just their special teams returns and stuff like that are kind of contributing to this, because this seems to be an ongoing theme that field position You know, again, when they got good field position, you know, to start the game, they went down and scored a touchdown. But their starting field position has been a real issue for them this year.
Yeah, there's no way to, you know, other than special teams to improve that. The penalties have hurt, too. You know, you get a good return and you bring it back to the 11 because somebody's holding. You know, Ty Davis had one of those 2 games ago. So you look at the return units, can you bust one? And then you look at the penalties. Can you clean those up? Those would be the good starts. And, you know, give him credit. Last 2 games, they opened with touchdowns. So he's figured out how to get a script that works. You know, this one was real basic. It was a run, pass to Jonnu Smith, run, pass to Jonnu Smith, run, pass to Jonnu Smith, and you're down the field. So that's what I was saying. Hey, Jonnu Smith's getting open, throw him the ball. And he did that in the first series there. So, I mean, you know, you take what you can do, you know, and they've shown at times they could, Robinson can get loose and Jonnu Smith can get loose. So they're going to get the ball on the opening drive as far as I'm concerned. And then you could throw that back shoulder fade on the sideline to Drake. You know, whatever plays you see work, put them back in the game plan and run them again. So, and he's got enough 7 games in to know what plays work and which ones don't.
D-Led, last question for you. This feels like a game where this coming Sunday, you can't afford to stub your toe. This is not a very good Tennessee Titans team. They, you know, they're talking about playing 2 quarterbacks and neither guy is very good. This feels like a game where, you know, and I thought the Falcons would do this against the Commanders, but this feels like a game where you have to go in there and just find a way to win and play some good football. I mean, this is not a very good Titans team that we're going to see on Sunday.
No, it's not. No, it's not, John. And the old Paul Brown deal there, if you got 2 quarterbacks, you don't have one.
Right.
So we're going to see that. But they do got a running back. And they got 2 of those, and you could have 2 running backs. So it's pretty clear what Coach Vrabel's got to do. He's a Buckeye. He knows exactly what to do. He's going to run the football and try to punch you in the mouth on defense. He's got some guys over there that can do that, Jeffrey Simmons et al. So it's going to be a bloodbath in Tennessee, and I know that's what Coach Smith is preaching to the team. He's like, I don't care who's the quarterback. We're going to have a fight on our hands. And Vrabel's going to try to take it to him, and he knows it. So I would have this team ready to be ready for the whole 15-round old-school heavyweight bout here against Tennessee. I don't care who the quarterback is because they're not going to – all they're going to be doing is handing the ball off to Derrick Henry and Tajay Spears. You know, they might throw an occasional pass to Hopkins, but that's about all they got. So – you know what the game plan is going to be going in. But this will be a test for Arthur Smith. He's going to be the hunted in this game. He's not the hunter anymore. How does he handle a team from the front and not the back? And that's going to be key because I'm expecting, it might be like 6-3 on Sunday. It's going to be a fight.
Yeah. And their offensive line versus our defensive line, I think, is going to be the battle of the game. You know, coming up on Sunday. D. Orlando Ledbetter, he is the Falcons beat writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. AJC.com is where you can check out all of his work. Follow him on his personal Twitter page, at D. Orlando AJC, and he joined me here on the WadeFord.com hotline. D. Led, my friend, appreciate a few minutes on the show. Always thank you for joining us, and we will certainly chat again with you here soon.
All right, John, thanks so much for having me, and I really appreciate coming on your show. Take care and have a great rest of the evening.
You got it. Thanks, D-Led. When we come back, it will be time for What's Bugging Chuckery. Hey, at least Washington and Oregon don't focus on transfers. Or that's what one expert on sports radio said, whatever. We'll play you the clip. Chuckery hanging out in the Kia Studios Tuesday night with you. Sports Radio 929 The Game, the Odyssey.com app. Sports Radio 92.9, The Game, back at a Chuckery Show, hanging out in the Kia Studios with you on this Tuesday evening. 404-726-0929. That is our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. 1 hour from right now, we will get to a rank'em. Yes, it is Tuesday night, and Oren is here, and we're talking Marvel
Porn. Stop.
What?
That last sentence you said.
What?
No.
What?
What did I tell you in the bathroom?
We first of all, weird thing to say just randomly all this. What did I tell you in the bathroom, Warren? Just a weird non sequitur there off the jump, John Chuckery.
I enjoy making you uncomfortable at times.
You live for that, yes.
That's true.
Not sometimes, often.
I mean, you know, it gets uncomfortable on Dukes and Bell in a different way at times, but this is a whole nother level of uncomfortableness that you face on a nightly basis here. Well, not nightly basis, but again, you're getting your feet wet in all this. So you know you're acclimating to my styles and all that. Even though we've worked together for years and years and years, you're now acclimating to my styles on a regular basis and stuff like that. So just don't cross the streams when all is said and done. So
and you still said it.
What? What did I say? No, I was just talking in generalities. We're watching Philadelphia and the D-bags right now. So 1-1 right now. Bomb just hit a home run to tie things up here in the bottom of the second.
That was the guy, too, who the story coming into tonight's game was moving him and Scott down the lineup because they had been struggling so much. And then, well, Baum kind of rewards Rob Thompson right there with hitting a home run.
Yeah, and, I mean, he's hitting cleanup. I mean, so, you know, he's got the home run tonight, Schwarber, Turner, Harper, and then Baum one for one in the game with the solo home run. So we'll see what happens in this game. Again, hopefully Arizona can find a way to win, but I think it's going to be tough to beat Philadelphia at home here, you know, in a Game 7. First ever Game 7, by the way, in Citizens Bank Park, which is where Philadelphia plays. Now, the Vet, that was an old-school stadium. Plenty of Game 7s in the old Vet, in the Veteran Stadium, but in Great America, or what did I say, Citizens Bank Park, or what? I can't even keep up with all these new stadiums and everything like that. Citizens Bank Park is the first ever Game 7 that has been played there. And there's been some big moments in that stadium. I mean, it's not like that there hasn't been big moments for the Philadelphia Phillies in that stadium. It's just that there's never been a Game 7.
They won a world title there.
Yeah, and Roy Halladay pitched a perfect game, right? Or a no-hitter, at least, in a playoff game. So, again, there's been some big moments that have happened, but they haven't had a Game 7 yet in that stadium. And, of course,
I texted our buddy Hugh Douglas earlier and asked if he had pucker butt or lemon booty with this game tonight. And Hugh, true to form, says, like, I couldn't care less who wins this game.
Yeah, I mean, he's still a Braves fan. So, I mean, again, I don't know that he grew up in Indy. You know, you know, Hugh and I grew up 70 miles from one another.
Yeah, Mansfield. And Akron.
Yes. Well, I'm from Canton.
Canton, I'm sorry, not Akron.
He was from Mansfield.
McKinley, that's right, yes.
Yes. So, did you see that they had their 134th game the other day against Maslin McKinley, and then there was, after game, there was a big fight that was on the field.
Oh, the 134th. Fight or just the first fight?
No, just the first fight, but the 134th meeting between the two schools. So, and they had a big fight at the end of the game. So, it was
nice.
Not a pretty sight. Yeah. So, anyway. All right. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will talk a little bit about Hawks basketball as they obviously open up the season starting tomorrow night. So, no show tomorrow. They will be in Charlotte to open up the season against the, what are they, the Bobcats still? Have they changed their name? What are they now?
They've been the Hornets for quite a while.
Hornets,
John.
Yeah. Okay, I can't remember what these teams' names are or whatever like that. So, all right, speaking of forgetting all the names about everybody, let's get to something we call What's Bugging Chuckery.
Don't look now, but somebody out there just got Chuckery ticked off. Like, that's hard.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
It's time for What's Bugging Chuckery on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
So, listen, I know people always get upset and aggravated because I don't remember things and I get some facts wrong about different things. Like I forget a guy's name or who this guy played for or whatever like that. Okay. But, you know, I have good mentors in doing this because arguably one of the, what would you say he is, Orin? One of the top three national hosts in the country.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah.
I mean, maybe one, but maybe at worst three, okay? And you know who I'm talking about is Colin Cowherd. And we have a lot of fun with Cowherd, whether it's he was talking about how he was a big AC/DC fan And one of his favorite songs from AC/DC was Rock You Like a Hurricane.
Oh, that's one of the most popular songs.
Yes. And he said that on air. So here he is. What was this Joel Klatt that he was talking to? So Joel Klatt is a Fox college football analyst.
Joel Klatt's
whatever.
A Pac-12 guy, too, if I'm mistaken, right?
Yes, I think he is, too, yeah. But he's on Fox, right? I mean, he's on their Fox coverage and all that kind of stuff. Here's him talking about Washington and Oregon and the transfer portal.
Point. Here's what I loved about it. You know, LSU, Colorado, USC, a lot of transfers, a lot of flash. I watched two foundational programs, great coaches, great players. Here's my question.
Really? You know, the tackle for Oregon was a transfer from Washington.
You can continue. Have one.
No, just continue. That's fine.
Here's my thing about
Michael
Washington.
Michael Penix, wasn't he a transfer?
Oh, that's right.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, Kalen had
Wait, him wasn't it. Bo Nix a tri- Oh, that's – okay. No. Continue.
Yeah. So he loves the idea, Cowter does, that these – What was the term that he used? Was it blue blood or whatever it was? These two blue blood programs, like Oregon's been a blue blood program for what, 25 years? They're talking all these examples of teams using the transfer portal, and here's Washington and Oregon with potentially two Heisman finalists that were. Oh, yeah, transfers. Michael Penix came from Indiana, and obviously Bo Nix came from Auburn. Now, they didn't trade for them at the deadline, okay? There wasn't a trade at, like, Auburn and Oregon didn't make a trade at the trade deadline to get Bo Nix. Michael Penix was not traded from Indiana. No, these guys were transfers. So other than the two potential Heisman finalists, there's no transfers for Oregon and Washington. And then he brought up the tackle. They all do this. The only guy that doesn't use the transfer portal that needs to use it is Dabo. He's the only, and again, he's offered kids, but he's not using it. He can't get kids to come in. He needs to be using it. But I digress. But again, two of the best players in college football at those two specific programs, and they were both transfers. Now, again, maybe that slipped his mind. Maybe he didn't think about those two guys. I know Cal Turd is a West Coast kind of guy, right? He's a West Coast Pac-12 kind of guy. Maybe he didn't realize where those guys had come from. I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. Well, no, not really. I'm not. But, you know, again, he doesn't deserve anything like that. But other than those two guys, you know, they don't use the transfer portal. Other than both of those teams' best players, they don't use the transfer portal. See, we all do this. Doesn't matter how many millions of dollars is Cal Turd paid. Probably $4 or $5 million.
He owns his own podcasting network, too.
He owns his own podcast network, and he's syndicated all across the country and everything. I'm sure he's getting millions and millions of dollars to do this. And I understand. And he gets that other goofball, Jason McIntyre, on his show, and he's as big a goofball as anybody. He's hot. I mean, again, he's a step above Hot Take Tommy as far as just giving his hot takes out there and saying his ridiculous stuff. But other than the fact that two of the best players in college football, two quarterbacks, two of the best players in the Pac-12, you know, other than those transfers, they don't use the portal. See, it's not just me, Orn. See, I've got the excuse. I had the stroke. My brain got fried last December. It's almost been a year. December 14th will be 1 year since my brain got fried. And I still... Like, I don't. There are little details of things that I don't remember, or like there's little things that I have trouble trying to put together. Okay, like sometimes coherent thoughts and stuff like that. So I've at least got an excuse. Does Cal Turd have an excuse? Did he have a stroke? I don't think he did. I think he's younger than I am. How old? How old is Colin Cowherd? See, look up how old he is. He's got to be my age or, oh, wow, he's 59? Wow. Okay, well, maybe he's getting kind of senile. Maybe in his old age. Again, he's kind of getting senile. But other than the two transfer quarterbacks, they're two of the best players in the country. They don't dip their toe into the transfer portal. And that's what's bugging Chuck Reed. All right, Philadelphia and Arizona head to the top of the third. They're tied up at one apiece. Does Washington get home field through the World Series? Are they the home team? What was their record this year? I'm trying to. Yeah, Texas gets it. So yeah, they'll get home field either way, no matter who wins this game. Yeah, they won 90 games this
Shout
year.
Shout out to Dede Lewis. He just texted and said, "This is the first game seven in franchise history for the Phillies."
Franchise history.
It's a franchise history.
So you mean to tell me when they in the World Series in 1950, they were in the World Series in 80, they were in the World Series in 83. They were in the World Series. What was that year? Was it 08?
08 is when they won it, yeah.
Okay, 08 when they had Hamels and Ryan Howard and all those guys. And then they were in the World Series last year.
Yeah, the franchise history, which dates back to 1883. This is their first Game 7.
That is crazy. I would have
thought they would have had at least one, yeah.
I mean, yeah. I mean, think about they've been to the World Series.
Well, Joe knocked them out in Game 6.
Well, say that again.
Carter knocked him out in Game 6. That was the big blast.
Oh, that was 90. Yeah, so they were in the World Series in 50, 80, 83, 93, 2008, and 2022. So they've been in the World Series, what, 7 times?
Yeah, this is the first Game 7.
Wow, that's crazy to think. All right, Hawks get cranked up tomorrow night. Where realistically do you think the Hawks fit within the Eastern Conference? We'll talk about that next. Chuck Reed hanging out with you in the Kia Studios. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Odyssey.com app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, back at a Chuck Reed Show, hanging out in the Kia Studios with you on this Tuesday evening. 404-726-0929. That is our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. 1 hour from right now, we will get to a rank'em. Yes, it is Tuesday night, and Orin is here, and we're talking Marvel.
I'm always. No, stop.
What?
That last sentence you said.
What?
No.
What? What did I tell you in the bathroom?
First of all, weird thing to say just randomly all this. What did I tell you in the bathroom, Orin? Just a weird non sequitur there off the jump, John Chuckery.
I enjoy making you uncomfortable at times.
You live for that, yes.
That's true.
Not sometimes, often.
I mean, you know, it gets uncomfortable on Dukes and Bell in a different way at times, but this is a whole nother level of uncomfortableness that you face on a nightly basis here. Well, not nightly basis, but again, you're getting your feet wet in all this. So, you know, you're acclimating to my styles and all that. Even though we've worked together for years and years and years, you're now acclimating to my styles on a regular basis and stuff like that. So just don't cross the streams when all is said and done. So,
and you still said it.
What? What? What did I say? No, I was just talking in generalities. We're watching Philadelphia and the D-bags right now. So 1-1 right now. Bomb just hit a home run to tie things up here in the bottom of the second.
That was the guy, too, who the story coming into tonight's game was moving him and Scott down the lineup because they had been struggling so much. And then, well, Bomb kind of rewards Rob Thompson right there with hitting a home run.
Yeah, and, I mean, he's hitting cleanup. I mean, so, you know, he's got the home run tonight, Schwarber, Turner, Harper, and then Baum, one for one in the game with the solo home run. So we'll see what happens in this game. Again, hopefully Arizona can find a way to win, but I think it's going to be tough to beat Philadelphia at home here, you know, in a Game 7. First ever Game 7, by the way, in Citizens Bank Park, which is where Philadelphia plays. Now, the vet That was an old school stadium. Plenty of game sevens in the old vet in the veteran stadium, but in Great America, or what is it? What did I say? Citizens Bank Park, or what? I can't even keep up with all these new stadiums and everything like that. Citizens Bank Park is the first ever game seven that has been played there. And there's been some big moments in that stadium. I mean, it's not like that there hasn't been big moments for the Philadelphia Phillies in that stadium. It's just that there's never been a game seven.
They won a world title there.
Yeah, and Roy Halladay pitched a perfect game, right? Or a no-hitter, at least, in a playoff game. So, again, there's been some big moments that have happened, but they haven't had a game seven yet in that stadium. And, of course,
I texted our buddy Hugh Douglas earlier and asked if he had pucker butt or lemon booty with this game tonight. And Hugh, true to form, says, like, I couldn't care less who wins this game.
Yeah, I mean, he's still a Braves fan. So, I mean, again, I don't know that he grew up in Indy. You know, Hugh and I grew up 70 miles from one another.
Yeah, Mansfield. And Akron.
Yes. Well, I'm from Canton.
Canton, I'm sorry, not Akron.
He was from Mansfield.
McKinley, that's right, yes.
Yes. So, did you see that they had their 134th game the other day against Maslin McKinley, and then there was, after game, there was a big fight that was on the field.
Oh, the 134th fight, or just the first fight?
No, just the first fight, but the 134th meeting between the two schools. So, and they had a big fight. At the end of the game. So it was
nice.
Not a pretty sight. Yeah. So anyway. All right. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will talk a little bit about Hawks basketball as they obviously open up the season starting tomorrow night. So no show tomorrow. They will be in Charlotte to open up the season against the, what are they, the Bobcats still? Have they changed their name? What are they now?
They've been the Hornets for quite a while.
Hornets,
John.
Yeah. Okay, I can't remember what these teams' names are or whatever like that. So, all right, speaking of forgetting all the names about everybody, let's get to something we call What's Bugging Chuckery.
Don't look now, but somebody out there just got Chuckery ticked off. Like, that's hard.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
It's time for What's Bugging Chuckery on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
So, listen, I know people always get upset and aggravated because I don't remember things and I get some facts wrong about different things. Like I forget a guy's name or who this guy played for or whatever like that. Okay. But, you know, I have good mentors in doing this because arguably one of the, what would you say he is, Orin? One of the top three national hosts in the country.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah.
I mean, maybe one, but maybe at worst three, okay? And you know who I'm talking about is Colin Cowherd. And we have a lot of fun with Cowherd, whether it's he was talking about how he was a big AC/DC fan, and one of his favorite songs from AC/DC was Rocky Like a Hurricane.
Oh, that's one of the most popular songs.
Yes, and he said that on air. So here he is. Was this Joel Klatt that he was talking to? So Joel Klatt is a Fox college football analyst
Joel
or
Klatt's
whatever.
A Pac-12 guy, too, if I'm mistaken, right?
Yes, I think he is, too, yeah. But he's on Fox, right? I mean, he's on their Fox coverage and all that kind of stuff. Here's him talking about Washington and Oregon and the transfer portal.
Point, here's what I loved about it. You know, LSU, Colorado, USC, a lot of transfers, a lot of flash. I watched two foundational programs, great coaches, great players. Here's my question.
Really? You know, the tackle for Oregon was a transfer from Washington.
You can have one.
No, just continue. That's fine.
Here's my thing about
Michael
Washington.
Michael Penix, wasn't he a transfer?
Oh, that's right.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, Kalen had
Wait, him wasn't it. Bo Nix a tri- Oh, that's – okay. No. Continue.
Yeah. So he loves the idea, Cowherd does, that these – What was the term that he used? Was it blue blood or whatever it was? These two blue blood programs, like Oregon's been a blue blood program for what, 25 years? They're talking all these examples of teams using the transfer portal, and here's Washington and Oregon with potentially two Heisman finalists that were. Oh, yeah, transfers. Michael Penix came from Indiana, and obviously Bo Nix came from Auburn. Now, they didn't trade for them at the deadline, okay? There wasn't a trade at, like, Auburn and Oregon didn't make a trade at the trade deadline to get Bo Nix. Michael Penix was not traded from Indiana. No, these guys were transfers. So other than the two potential Heisman finalists, there's no transfers for Oregon and Washington. And then he brought up the tackle. They all do this. The only guy that doesn't use the transfer portal that needs to use it is Dabo. He's the only, and again, he's offered kids, but he's not using it. He can't get kids to come in. He needs to be using it. But I digress. But again, two of the best players in college football at those two specific programs, and they were both transfers. Now, again, maybe that slipped his mind. Maybe he didn't think about those two guys. I know Cal Turd is a West Coast kind of guy, right? He's a West Coast Pac-12 kind of guy. Maybe he didn't realize where those guys had come from. I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. Well, no, not really. I'm not. But, you know, again, he doesn't deserve anything like that. But other than those two guys, you know, they don't use the transfer portal. Other than both of those teams' best players, they don't use the transfer portal. See, we all do this. Doesn't matter how many millions of dollars is Cal Turd paid? Probably $4 or $5 million.
He owns his own podcasting network, too.
He owns his own podcast network, and he's syndicated all across the country and everything. I'm sure he's getting millions and millions of dollars to do this. And I understand. And he gets that other goofball, Jason McIntyre, on his show, and he's as big a goofball as anybody. He's hot. I mean, again, he's a step above Hot Take Tommy as far as just giving his hot takes out there and saying his ridiculous stuff. But other than the fact that two of the best players in college football, two quarterbacks, two of the best players in the Pac-12, you know, other than those transfers, they don't use the portal. See, it's not just me, Orn. See, I've got the excuse. I had the stroke. My brain got fried last December. It's almost been a year. December 14th will be 1 year since my brain got fried. And I still, like, I don't, there are little details of things that I don't remember, or like there's little things that I have trouble trying to put together. Okay? Like sometimes coherent thoughts and stuff like that. So I've at least got an excuse. Does Cal Turd have an excuse? Did he have a stroke? I don't think he did. I think he's younger than I am. How old is Colin Cal Turd? See, look up how old he is. He's got to be my age or... Oh, wow, he's 59? Wow. Okay, well, maybe he's getting kind of senile. Maybe in his old age. Again, he's kind of getting senile. But other than the two transfer quarterbacks, they're two of the best players in the country. They don't dip their toe into the transfer portal. And that's what's bugging Chuck Reed. All right, Philadelphia and Arizona head to the top of the third. They're tied up at one apiece. Does Washington get home field through the World Series? Are they the home team? What was their record this year? I'm trying to remember. Yeah, Texas gets it. So yeah, they'll get home field either way, no matter who wins this game. Yeah, they won 90 games this
Shout
year.
Shout out to Dede Lewis. He just texted and said, "This is the first game seven in franchise history for the Phillies."
Franchise history.
It's a franchise history.
So you mean to tell me when they in the World Series in 1950, they were in the World Series in 80, they were in the World Series in 83. They were in the World Series. What was that year? Was it 08?
08 is when they won it, yeah.
Okay, 08 when they had Hamels and Ryan Howard and all those guys. And then they were in the World Series last year.
Yeah, the franchise history, which dates back to 1883. This is their first Game 7.
That is crazy.
I would have thought they would have had at least one, yeah.
I mean, yeah. I mean, think about they've been to the World Series.
Well, Joe knocked them out in Game 6.
Well, say that again.
Carter knocked him out in Game 6. That was the big blast.
Oh, that was 90. Yeah, so they were in the World Series in 50, 80, 83, 93, 2008, and 2022. So they've been to the World Series, what, seven times?
Yeah, this is the first game seven.
Wow, that's crazy to think. All right, Hawks get cranked up tomorrow night. Where realistically do you think the Hawks fit within the Eastern Conference? We'll talk about that next. Chuck, we're hanging out with you in the Kia Studios. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Odyssey.com app.